The IFA Show. The stories behind the financial advice headlines with the team from IFA.
Welcome to the show. I'm IFA editor Sarah Kendall. After a turbulent election cycle, Joe Biden has emerged as the new US president, which is set to have significant implications for ESG investments in particular in 2021. Joining me today to discuss the market outlook for next year is James Harwood, Senior Portfolio Manager at Russell Investments. James, thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon, Sarah.
Now, James, how have markets responded to the outcome of the US election, which has been fairly chaotic compared to sort of normal election cycles that we've seen?
Yeah. So I think it's fair to say with President Trump, we always expected everything was going to be a little chaotic. Going into the election, we felt that markets were pretty good value, but the worst outcome was going to be a close election result. And that's exactly what we got. What changed very quickly afterwards was the vaccine news, which was really good. We've now got positive vaccines from three different providers. And particularly important was the efficacy of those vaccines at 90% or better. So as a result, we've seen equity markets stage a strong rally so far in November. The Aussie market's up about 12%, and that's today, 24th of November. It's outperformed the US market during the month, which has been encouraging. And we really think that the stage is set for Australian shares to continue potentially into the year end.
Yeah, I guess, if we're looking at sort of 2021 and how the equity market's going to play out now that the race for a COVID-19 vaccine seems to be quite well advanced. We've got a few different sort of pharmaceutical companies saying that they've got sort of, very high rates of effectiveness in each of their trials. How do you see that sort of affecting how markets are going to play out in the coming year?
Yeah, so we think equities are well supported for 2021. There's a high level of stimulus from both governments and also from central banks. So that's generally normally a good background for equity markets. We do expect to see some setbacks along the way. Obviously, it's not going to be plain sailing. And, COVID-related setbacks where we're having outbreaks in the Northern Hemisphere winter like we're seeing right now in the US and Europe, we expect that's going to have an impact along the way for equities. Clearly, it's not had much of an impact so far, but we'd expect that to have an impact, through next year. We also think that non-US markets are poised to outperform. Non-US markets offer better value than the US. They're also higher beta to the economic recovery, which we expect from the global economy next year.
And I guess, looking even further out into the next few years, given that the longer term sort of economic consequences of the pandemic are likely to be sort of felt for a number of years, what sort of areas or sectors of the market are likely to do well from this sort of protracted recovery period that we're going to see?
Yeah, so I think you're highlighting there that we're early part of the recovery phase, and that's typically a good phase for cyclicals or cyclical stocks that are geared to economic growth. So we'd expect companies from the industrial sectors, consumer discretionary, and also healthcare, I think, is well placed to benefit from a Biden presidency. Looking to China, clearly a big influence on our market. Commodities have been supported by demand from China for a number of years now, and China is accelerating economic growth-wise again, and we expect that trend to continue into 2021. Normally, in that kind of environment, energy and oil would do quite well. But there's definitely some secular changes to that part of the market. Energy has underperformed significantly recently. We're having a bit of a bounce back so far this month. But under Biden and a greater focus on renewables, we think that's going to be an overhang for the energy sector into next year.
And I guess, looking at how sort of the US might change under Biden, what sort of policies is he likely to bring forward and, what sort of stocks might benefit from the sort of change in administration?
Yeah, so I think it's clear that the US will be pursuing more environmentally friendly policies under Biden. He's committed to re-sign the Paris Agreement on his first day in office. He's also just appointed John Kerry to a specialist climate role. John Kerry was one of the key architects of the Paris Agreement. So I think we can expect renewable stocks to be, well supported and a good focus. The challenge really there is that there's not many pure plays on renewables, virtually none in Australia. We've had a company, Infigen Energy, that's just been taken over by Iberdrola. I can name a few focus stocks in global shares, but they're also getting quite expensive. So what I think is going to be the most interesting for investors is how companies change their business models under Biden. And we've seen recently Fortescue Metals talking about going more into renewables and hydrogen in Tasmania. And I think companies that can adapt like that are likely to do well under Biden. I would also talk about Trump's achievements, and I think one of them was really realigning the goalposts with China, which I think was long overdue. So I think that was one of the positives to come out of Trump, albeit he often lacked diplomacy in the way he went about that. We expect under Biden a return of diplomatic relations under US and China, but we don't expect it to return to pre-Trump levels. We expect there will be ongoing kind of hostilities and controversies to emerge over the next couple of years. Lastly, I would say the other aspect is fiscal stimulus and investing in infrastructure. It looks like the Republicans are probably going to retain the Senate, so that's had an impact on the expected spend in infrastructure projects. So I think there's been quite a lot of good news in the prices of those stocks, and that might recede a little, if the Republicans do indeed retain the Senate.
I guess just following up on what you were saying about the US's relationship with China, I mean, if we're going to see sort of continuing hostilities there, albeit not at the same level as when Trump was president, how's that sort of going to affect both, both the US and Chinese sort of investment markets?
Look, I think generally speaking, through this period, a lot of companies have bounced back pretty well. Trump's latest policy was a directive to exit stocks like China Mobile. Mm. But investors have had a 12-month lead time for that. And, it'll be interesting to see whether Biden rescinds those kind of policies. So I think it's still very early days to make any kind of calls in that regard. I think we'll just have to wait for Biden to get into office next year and, see what he's really prioritizing in his first 6 to 12 months of office.
And I guess, if we're looking at ESG investing specifically, how's that sort of area of the market going to evolve in the coming year? I know you were talking about sort of, there's not so much of a pure play in things like renewables, but is it going to be more about sort of seeing how the big blue chip companies are going to be factoring in those sorts of ESG factors a bit more?
I think so. I think what we've seen the last 2 to 3 years is a real trend for asset owners to try and influence companies and their boards through engagement activities. And I think that will certainly increase over the next year and years going forward. I do think, as I mentioned, the area of interest is how companies are going to evolve their business models, in a world that's going to definitely require more renewable energy going forward. Not only Fortescue, but Origin Energy and also AGL are now talking about building battery plants on the site of coal mines. So I think there's a lot of evolution that will take place over the next few years. And not all companies that are investing in renewables are going to be winners, clearly. And I think trying to identify, those companies that are the most successful or the most likely to be successful is going to be the key to identify, which companies to invest in.
In terms of, how you guys are seeing the ESG trend play out, do you think that, we've reached a sort of tipping point with investor and advisor demand for ESG strategies where they're being sort of taken seriously as, not so much of a fad anymore and really sort of a key plank of portfolio construction?
Yeah, so look, I think 2020 will obviously be remembered for the chaos that ensued from COVID-19, but for me, it really was the year that ESG came of age and really became part of the mainstream. We expect that demand for ESG products from advisors and clients is only going to continue. So far, the main area of interest has been in the E, the environmental part of ESG. That's been the greatest focus for investors. Morningstar highlighted a report earlier this year that featured Russell and the flows that we were seeing in two of our ESG products. One was the RARI ESG ETF. Another was the Low Carbon Global Shares Fund that I also manage. And this came at a time of extreme market volatility in that first half of 2020, when I think most equity funds were seeing redemptions through that period. So we've seen just this month, actually, the Low Carbon Global Shares Fund tick over the $1 billion mark. And we know for sure that this demand for decarbonization strategies is going to grow under a Biden presidency. And lastly, I think ESG interest is going to broaden. E for sure is going to be the biggest focus, but I do expect that the social and the governance aspects are going to become a greater focus for investors as well.
And with sort of Biden making that commitment to re-sign the US to the Paris Agreement, you know, obviously there's going to be an increased focus on global emissions again in 2021. How is this likely to play out in the investment space? I mean, how can investors get sort of exposure to this sort of, you know, the emissions or renewable technology space, given that there are fairly few sort of pure renewable stocks?
Yes. Yeah, so look, I think probably the first point I'd make there is that as the global economy starts to grow again, we'd expect the, you know, emissions to start ticking up and accelerating again. So for sure, the focus on carbon emissions is going to continue next year and the years going forward. We expect the focus on decarbonisation strategies is going to continue and grow. We're actually about to launch an ex-fossil fuel fund as a result of demand from a number of foundations and also seeing greater interest to basically exclude exposure to fossil fuels from individual investors as well. So I think that's going to be an important area. Obviously, it's not just about exclusions. I think it's also worth highlighting the targets that countries and companies have set, the net zero emissions targets by 2050. I think this debate is going to broaden over the next, more of a medium term kind of time frame. But again, I think it's going to start to see other companies change their business models and focus more on those renewable areas. And yeah, right now in Australian shares, I think we've just got to focus on some of the larger cap stocks that are starting to change their business models.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you were talking about the S and the G becoming a bit more prominent as well as the E side of ESG. And I guess, you know, with some of the big scandals that we've seen this year in terms of, you know, sexual harassment at AMP and Rio Tinto's sort of getting in hot water over, you know, building a mine over the Aboriginal land there, it seems like there does seem to be a greater relationship between ESG and company performance than ever before. I mean, how do... Looking at it from an advisor perspective, how do they sort of select a fund manager that they know is taking proper account of these types of risks?
Yeah, so firstly, I'd highlight that both the AMP and Rio Tinto scandals were initially governance issues, and they've certainly been lobbied very hard by asset owners since both of these scandals. The Rio scandal was also an environmental and a social issue for local communities and the Aboriginal owners of the land. So we've seen, you know, major fallouts as a result at the board level for Rio, and the company certainly appears to be being governed in a better, more environmentally friendly way right now. I think advisors need to understand how their managers assess company governance and the policies they have around this. Asset owners like ourselves have been a lot more collaborative and are engaging increasingly with companies to influence their behaviour, and we're voting on all of our proxy votes at annual meetings. So I think that's an important part of an investment company's policies, making sure they vote their proxies and are engaged with companies. We use a mix of qualitative and quantitative measures to kind of integrate ESG into the investment process. For the quantitative strategies that I run, we're relying on ESG scores, and we have our own proprietary metric, a material ESG score that we use in the portfolio construction process. More broadly, at the multi-manager level across all of our funds at Russell, we have a manager research team that research managers on their ESG credentials. And you know, that's an important part or an important screening process to ensure the managers we include are doing quite well on ESG characteristics. Lastly, I would say if advisors really do want, you know, that ESG-specific fund, then there are definitely funds out there as well that that focus on both kind of positive tilts to ESG, but also have a lot of commonly accepted ESG screens to take out companies that are exposed to either fossil fuels or alcohol or gambling. So it might be that for some advisors and their clients that are, you know, a dedicated ESG fund is the best solution.
And how big a part does ESG strategy play in Russell's sort of overall fund offering to advisors, and how has this been growing in the recent sort of months? I know you mentioned that your one sort of ETF has kind of taken off from a growth perspective.
Yes. So we've been offering ESG strategies or dedicated ESG strategies at Russell Australia for the last 5 years. We launched the RARI ETF, the ESG ETF, back in 2015. And more recently, 3 years ago, we launched the Low Carbon Global Shares Fund, which is this decarbonisation strategy that I've mentioned. This year, ESG has been a huge focus of activity across Russell Investments globally. So there's been a lot of groups I've been a part of to really try and articulate how we're managing ESG and how we're integrating that into the investment process. It's not just about the dedicated ESG funds, that some of which I run, but it's across the board in terms of the managers that we put into our multi-manager funds. We're scoring them all on ESG characteristics. We don't want, managers in the funds that really do not have decent ESG approaches with their investment process. And finally, one kind of achievement we've made this year is to measure carbon footprints for all of our funds globally. That was a really big project. We've got many funds across the firm, and we're now able to review the carbon exposure of a fund very quickly across the board. So I expect more of those kind of metrics to develop over the next year. So I think, in short, our efforts and also the resource that has gone into ESG across Russell has improved and increased an awful lot over the last 18 months to help deliver, good solutions both for our ESG funds, but also for the other multi-manager funds that aren't dedicated ESG strategies. So it's been a big area of growth for the company, and I'm expecting over the coming months and years that more and more ESG solutions will evolve as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, James, for coming in today and giving us some insights from this rapidly growing area of the market.
Thanks, Sarah.
And if you like what you heard on today's podcast, please leave us a rating on the podcast platform of your choice. You can also follow us on social media through LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. If you have any written feedback, the email for that is editor@ifa.com.au. That's today's show. Thanks for joining us.